It's another edition of Be Well, our provider podcast from the physical medicine and rehabilitation experts at Good Shepherd Physician Group.
Our topic today is EDX medicine, and my guest is Dr. Andrew Reich. He's a physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist in interventional pain management and musculoskeletal medicine at the Good Shepherd Rehabilitation Network. Dr. Reich, explain a little bit about EDX medicine and how did it evolve?
Basically, electrodiagnostic medicine is an evaluation of neuromuscular function. Basically started over 50 plus years ago at the Mayo Clinic and evolved an evaluation for peripheral nerve entrapments, including the neck, carpal tunnel, ulnar tunnel, occipital tunnel, the wrist for the Guillain canal, peripherally for inflammatory disorders, muscle evaluations for myopathy. It's an effective evaluation of how the peripheral nervous system works and how myopathies can occur. We have a lot of primary care providers that have challenging patients with paresthesias or dysesthesias and a non-particular dermatome, i.e. they may have someone complaining of hand numbness, tingling, and it involves several different fingers, but not your classic carpal tunnel syndrome. Sometimes they may have concurrent neck pain. Sometimes they may have weakness. And this helps to distinguish nerve etiology pain and muscle etiology pain from other joint-related issues or tendinopathy. So electrodiagnostics basically looks at large fiber nerves and evaluates them with through a detailed electrodiagnostic consultation to figure out if there's damage at certain anatomic locations in the body to help physicians better tailor their treatment to what is found on electrodiagnostics. Here at Good Shepherd, specialist physicians in nerve, muscle, and bone diseases diagnose patients with various diseases and disorders based upon physical examinations, laboratory reports, and or test results. These nuanced skills have required 4 years of residency training after medical school, followed by, in some cases, 1 to 2 years of fellowship training. I would argue patients prefer to be seen by someone who has specialized training and years of experience in neuromuscular diseases for that initial evaluation, so the diagnosis is correct the first time and the right management is chosen each time to get you down the road of recovery. That's why I'm such a strong proponent of electrodiagnostic testing, i.e. EMGs and nerve conduction studies, as literature has shown a significant impact on patient health, as it often leads to either a change in a diagnosis or a change in patient management or even both. To highlight that fact, Dr. Heather Lindstrom's review of 1,400 patients basically electrodiagnostic studies performed by certified trained specialists. So being able to make an accurate diagnosis the first time around can limit pathology and improve patients for returning them back to work at a sooner fashion.
Doctor, like any diagnostic tool, the validity of EDX results are somewhat dependent on the clinician performing it. And as you've just said and spoken about the training, expand a little bit more for us about the process or algorithm that you would use in performing EDX testing and why it is so important that it is dependent on the experience of the clinician performing it.
Unlike other diagnostic tests used in medicine where you kind of show up to have an image taken or something done to you by a machine without interaction with the physician, electrodiagnostic testing is really determined, the quality of it is determined by the practitioner, and it's unique and that it's actually more of an extended consultation with a specialist, beginning with an interactive, focused history and extensive neurologic physical examination, even before you get to the testing study. So it's unique in that fashion. And with the extensive training that physical medicine rehabilitation physicians have, we're best suited to take those physical exam findings and clinical history and extrapolate and better tailor our tests, or the electrodiagnostic tests, to the patient to figure out what's going on. I get frequent referrals for quote-unquote polyneuropathy evaluations or radiculopathy evaluations when I do a clinical exam and get a better history than the referring provider and change things entirely. One recent example was someone who was referred for L5 radiculopathy, i.e. pinched nerves at the low back, was having difficulty walking. When I saw him in the room for the very first time, he was in a wheelchair and was having some difficulty breathing and had atrophy of the muscles in his hands. So he wasn't complaining about any numbness tingling in his hands. So that changed the equation for me, and I examined him, found diffuse weakness, significant atrophy of multiple muscle systems, and I ended up evaluating him for evaluation for potential Lou Gehrig's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, and that's what he had. And because I was able to find that, I was able to quickly connect that patient into seeing a neuromuscular neurologist and get him managed for his Lou Gehrig's disease promptly within no time at all compared with a typical 6 to 8 month waiting period is to see a specialist in that field. Same with a patient who has a carpal tunnel syndrome. If I find it, I know prognostically what the outcomes are for surgery and how long one should, whether one should do wrist splints, conservative interventions with an injection, or just go straight to surgery to have the optimal outcome. Knowing those statistics is really important to helping patients navigate the medical system. This is not part of the training of any other specialist except physical medicine, rehabilitation, and neurology. A common example that we consider and get referrals for are cases of unilateral foot drop. The algorithm that we use is, well, we look from basically, even though it's electrodiagnostics, it's a peripheral nervous system evaluation, we consider, all right, is it a central nervous system component as well? After we've done the focused electrodiagnostic, after we've done the focused physical examination and clinical history thing, is there something going on? There's a stroke, a spinal cord tumor, within the canal from the neck to the lumbar spine. Is there a pinched L5 nerve root at the lumbar spine, which would lead to foot drop? Is there a sciatic nerve injury from a distant history of radiation exposure, so say if you had rectal cancer? Has there been a history of dislocated hip? We look at their job history. Are they a strawberry picker or a carpenter? Does a lot of repetitive squatting? Because you can get a nerve entrapment at the fibular head. Or sometimes you can get an asymmetric polyneuropathy from vascular disease. So we look at blood flow at the leg and then also look for other sensory nerve damage that would not be affected in other parts of the anatomy if there are entrapments in the central nervous system or peripherally at the spine. There are many different options, but that algorithm is something I use for every single patient. And based upon my findings, I tailor my electrodiagnostic study from those and make sure I rule out any other processes. If I'm unable to rule out a process, I will recommend imaging of a certain region. Sometimes people with polyneuropathy, the damage is so extensive. If there's a history of cancer, I will sometimes recommend evaluation of the lumbosacral plexus to rule that out with a simple CAT scan. But I usually talk this over with the primary care provider if I do make imaging recommendations, which are infrequent.
So speak about the types of conditions that it can definitively rule out. And also, doctor, discuss some of the effects of the comorbidities, such as vascular conditions or diabetes, on using this type of treatment and diagnostic tool.
Well, unfortunately, with some of our people with peripheral vascular disease, including diabetes and other inflammatory endocrine abnormalities, you could have concurrent processes in place. People that have hypothyroidism and diabetes may have numbness, tingling in their feet. And unfortunately, as the diabetes or uncontrolled hypothyroidism progresses, you can lose sensation and not have any complaints of numbness, tingling due to the nature of the extensive damage of the nerve. But in that setting of that lack of sensation, you could also have a concurrent process like carpal tunnel syndrome going on, where diabetics and hypothyroid patients can have that. By using electrodiagnostics, one can figure if that is concurrently going on, regardless if the patients have complaints at that time or not. With carpal tunnel syndrome, I often have patients that come in. I have one-sided hand pain. You get a diagnosis of carpal tunnel electrodiagnostics, and then it makes you think more. Okay, did you ever have hand pain in the other side? It's like, oh, yes, I had it. It went away after a few years, and it doesn't bother me anymore. And you look at the other hand that they have no complaints on, and there's atrophy of certain muscles involved with median nerve involvement. So it's useful to help flush out some nuanced findings when the patient may not even have symptoms in that general area because of its sensitivity and specificity. With a nerve rootlet evaluation of the neck for radiculopathy, I can, within six muscle samples by needle EMG, with combined with the nerve conduction studies, I can have a 95% sensitivity rate to rule out a radiculopathy. And that's extensively cheaper than a cervical spine MRI, which is overused, I believe. And we'll often find degenerative changes in asymptomatic people starting in their late 20s and early 30s.
Along those lines, then, how does EDX testing impact the timeline of care delivery, and how do most patients respond to this type of testing? Discuss your experience with the mind-body connection for us.
An evaluation can be timely. After an injury, a neck, back, it can take about 3 weeks before the nerve roots cause damage to the peripheral muscles to have any positive findings on EMG. So we try not to evaluate patients prior to 3 weeks unless there's frank weakness to make sure we're not missing something that may develop later as nerve damage evolves. But if we catch something like a tarsal tunnel syndrome early, we can refer to the appropriate surgeon to decompress the area to protect the nerve that's being actively injured so that you don't lose foot strength or muscle strength. One of the classic presentations with a mind-body connection is a pinched nerve in the back. You have a lot of people that have complaints of sciatica or from quote-unquote lumbar stenosis. When we, as part of that consultation, we evaluate for other etiologies that may present with the exact same pattern, with greater trochanteric bursitis or gluteus medius syndrome, facet arthropathy, SI joint arthropathy. Our examination on physical exam helps evaluate those potentials that mimic a pinched nerve. And if we find that a patient has arthritis, but their EMG is negative for a radiculopathy, a pinched nerve in the back, we can help encourage the patient to say, all right, give us a little bit more time to improve. You don't have to jump straight to surgery. There's a significant anxiety and existential despair amongst patients, even physicians that are patients, when they don't understand the mechanism of their discomfort. If you can help qualify and quantify why they're having pain, you can help control that anxiety. And sometimes, as we've been trained as fellows, is to say pain is 40% biomechanical and 60% emotional. If you can help educate the patient to limit their uncertainty, usually we help patients avoid surgery that's premature, and that would normally their pain would resolve with the tincture of time. And it's unique because they're not used to having a doctor spend over an hour with them face-to-face, evaluating, getting clinical history, and doing the study and talking with them the entire time. So a lot of information comes up, and once they're done with their study, they feel confident in the results, which helps with the anxiety and the uncertainty.
That's fascinating, Dr. Reich. So wrap it up for us. What would you like other physicians and other providers to know about EDX testing?
Well, the physicians that do these are typically specialists in nerve, muscle, and bone diseases and have a broad differential for etiology of what could be causing a pain, dysesthesias, paresthesias, or weakness, and then how to triage the findings that they obtain to help as partnership with the primary care doctors. I'm here to do a thorough electrodiagnostic consultation and then partner with the referring physician to try and make the appropriate referrals, imaging study, or surgical referral, appropriate imaging study, or anything else the patient needs to further work this up. We're here to help figure things out with some of these complex patients with complex medical histories. We sort of look the needle in the haystack sometimes, and sometimes we find it, but when we don't, we're very confident that through the sensitivity of this study, we have ruled out something much scarier that patients may be concerned about. And therefore, the primary care doctor and the patient and work towards getting improvement in a rapid process, in some cases, returning to work faster. We're here and available, and we're always are available for a phone call for questions and discussion with the referring provider to help tailor therapies or interventions based upon our findings in electrodiagnostics.
Thank you so much, Doctor, for joining us today and explaining the nuances of EDX testing and sharing your expertise. This is Be Well, a podcast for rehabilitation providers from rehabilitation providers. For more information on resources available at Good Shepherd Rehabilitation Network, please visit goodshepherdrehab.org. That's goodshepherdrehab.org. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.